When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Yeah, I just feel like every month one of you nice people from the White House comes on the show to talk about inflation, and you talk about these tools in the president's toolkit, and you don't use them. You don't use these tools. And, you know, there's debating and discussing going on, and meanwhile prices are still going up.
Look, the president right now is in the Middle East because he wants to try to get as much oil on the market as possible. That is the way that we will bring down prices.
Jake Tapper not taking any of their ass from the White House on CNN yesterday. You talk about these tools, but you never use them. By the way, I got an illness of some sort. And I'm trying to remember the old saying. Is it starve a COVID, feed a monkeypox?
Or is that's it? Yep.
Yeah, because I don't know which I have. Anyway, inflation is clearly the number one story in America right now and is going to be for a while, whether you like it or not. I got into a deep dive on interest rates last night in my cold-induced haze for some reason. You know, Paul Volcker was the head of the Fed the last time we whipped inflation now, the inflation that had started in the 70s. And Jimmy Carter came along and brought in this Volcker guy, and then Reagan re-nominated him, so he stayed around for a while. But he jumped interest rates. So we had, what, a 0.75 jump not long ago, and it got a lot of attention. The stock market reacted, and it was the biggest jump in 30 years or whatever. Volcker came in and started jumping the interest rates 5 percentage points at a time.
Ho! That's no soft landing. That's shooting you out of the air.
So they had gone with, in the late 70s, something called stop and go, I think that was. It was the idea they would, like, hit you with a high interest rate and then go back low. Hit you with a high interest rate and go back low. Didn't work. Because businesses were like, I know the interest rate's low, but I'm not investing because I know what you're going to do here soon. So, and it just didn't work. So wow. He came in and it just was stop. No stop and go, just stop. And jumped up interest rates a lot and fast and just crushed everything. But, and it caused a recession. But it ended inflation and we haven't had it since then. Since, like, what, 1982 or something. We've really not had any inflation to worry about. So I don't know if this Fed or if the current stock market would allow for the sort of thing where you'd come along and have a 5-point jump all at once. Holy cow, that would get your attention.
Yeah, I just...
But that might be what it takes.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although I think the Fed is going to just keep booping it up by 0.75% until they see, significant results. They're guessing because the circumstances are so different. Every generation or so, they declare that they've figured it all out. Alan Greenspan seemed to have. But, in defense of the Biden administration, which I rarely rise to, You know, the pandemic and the supply chain issues and the rest of it, and then the war in Ukraine and gas prices, blah, that has absolutely had an effect on inflation. You know, unfortunately, when you exacerbate it through wild, irresponsible monetary policies for, you know, a couple of generations, Republicans, you too, you can't point at the other couple of factors that are involved and say, it was that. Well, yeah, but you're on the hot seat, too, inappropriately. Oh, speaking of being on the hot seat, a nice lady who is arguing with Jake Tapper, Cecilia Rouse, who has got to just be thrilled that she's been sent out to defend the administration, defending the indefensible, as so often happens. What's that? We're going to play clip number 35. I like this. Yeah, Jake Tapper going after her.
Congress needs a, we need to, we're open and willing. It's a great time for Congress to act on these important economic initiatives.
He's the Democratic president and the Congress is controlled by Democrats. So it's not as though you guys don't have each other's phone numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the truth is there's a limited amount that the executive can do. Well, or Congress for that matter.
Well, you know, again, looking at the last time we had inflation this high, it was about the Fed and bumping up interest rates, and we had the highest interest rates we've ever had. So the lowest interest rates we've ever had, 2008 and March of 2020, when it was basically zero, we've been hovering around the lowest interest rates ever for a while. And mm-hmm. people have just gotten so used to it that the higher numbers sound shocking. Like if we did a 5-point jump like they did back in the 80s, well, because they've been hanging around nothing, that seems extraordinary. But the highest Fed rate ever was 20% in 1980. It was briefly in 1981. It jumped up to 21.5% for 1 month. 21.5% interest rate to choke off inflation. I don't know if that's what it takes this time and what that's going to look like for home loans or car loans or your credit card. I can't even imagine.
Jack, the Dispatch mentions that the annual rate of inflation, 9.1% in June, is the highest level since 1981 when Dodgers lefty Fernando Valenzuela was awarded the National League Rookie of the Year.
Fantastic.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Dispatch. Who is the batting champ? So hourly earnings were up about 5% in June 2021. That's what we call the inflationary spiral. But since you have to adjust for inflation, they've actually fallen 3.6 over the past year, faster than at any point in the last 40 years. So congratulations. Everybody took a 3.5% pay cut, even as you got a raise. So, whoops.
Well, that's why. You know, that could continue for quite a few years. If you looked at those inflation charts starting in the mid-70s through about 81, inflation could stay high for a while. And at some point, these, you know, 3%, 5%, whatever pay cuts were all taken, you'd be willing to take a very high interest rate. If that's going to stop me from losing 3, 4, 5% of my wages every single year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nobody knows what the right thing is to do. There's a lot of guessing that happens there. But we do have a precedent of punishing the economy with high interest rates and fixing it in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it has gotten fixed and it has ended somewhat painfully at times. But so it will not go on forever, barring some twist in the road, because fate loves to, you know, throw a knuckleball at you like the great Fernando Valenzuela. Just when you think, okay, all right, I got all the factors in mind. We know what to do. And then, boom, there's a war or something crazy like that.
You know what I would like to know, though, is the difference culturally with spending between those high interest rates and if you tried to do it now. My guess is that because, you know, this is my parents' generation, and they were raised by the Depression generation. My guess is there was a lot more household savings going on at that time. There was a lot more delayed gratification and not buying stuff on interest payments going on at that time. There was a lot more living in smaller houses because it's a good idea. You know, just different culturally in terms of spending back then. It might be a way bigger shock to our system to have those kind of high interest rates with the way we currently live our lives.
Yeah, the cocaine binge economy, where we all spend like we're a sailor on leave with a snoot full of blow.
Right.
Yeah, that's just, it's not sustainable.
And need to live in a McMansion and put everything on the credit card because I'm not going to taper back my vacations or anything else, by God.
Right. So another comment that I thought was apt from the good folks at the Dispatch, they mentioned how some of the previous month's economic reports had some nuggets of good news and that sort of thing. But yesterday's release was pretty much all dreck, no nuggets.
The month over month. Nuggets of good news.
The month over month number for June was 30% higher than May's and more than four times the April figure. Core inflation ticked back up, as did services inflation, and upward price pressures have clearly trickled into parts of the economy, largely untouched by supply chain snarls and rising energy costs. Okay, that's an interesting and important distinction. You can blame a lot of the inflation on, you know, the supply chain thing, energy costs, the war, blah, blah, blah. But at some point, the infection spreads to all sectors of the economy. And that's when you get the whirlwind or the inflationary spiral. Rent, for example, went up in June more than it has in any month since 1986. The Chinese are not shipping us rental properties on container ships. Okay, Russia
the rent
has not.
It's too damn high.
You know, that is more or less my point, sir. Thank you. the Russians are have not cut off piping rental properties through the Nord Stream pipeline to Europe. This is independent. If extrapolated out to a full year, book prices rose in June at 19.2% annual clip. So did the prices of bread, processed seafood, juice, footwear, linens, used cars, said Jason Furman, Harvard University economist, former chair of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors. Quote, there just wasn't a lot in this report to give anyone comfort about anything. Almost all of the news in it was bad.
Wow. Wow.
But it will turn. It will change.
Well, what's your point with that? Of course it will.
Well, yeah. But I just my point is not to present the crap out of people. Not to airing an unlistenable show. What's my point? It's not try to avoid driving our listeners' heads into the oven. The hell kind of question is that?
You having a good time, Joe?
Of course it will end. But how long? How much money am I going to lose? Or are you going to lose? Or are we all going to lose before
two and a half years and $60,000?
And I think we should have, I think what I was just talking about, there should be somebody at a blackboard talking about this on the evening news, and we should have a national conversation. What do we want to do, people? Do we want to try what we did in the early 80s? Do we want to jump the interest rate up so high that we choke off inflation? Who's in? Show of hands. I mean, I feel like we need to have this national conversation about this, as opposed to just, we're just kind of like shuffling along, kind of hoping it'll magically go away without any major moves by somebody.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. I was paying attention to the January 6th hearings and a story I saw that AOC's a communist.
Armstrong and Getty. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
I forewarned you.
Let's go, Brandon.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
You know, Jim Cramer is Mad Money, host of CNBC. We've interviewed him a number of times. Interesting dude. Anyway, he thinks that Gen Z spends too much money on stuff they don't need, and they're going to have to learn to get over it because times are going to be tough for a while. And I'm happy to hear him saying this. Sort of thing I'm going to be saying to my kids when they're old enough to have their own money. Nearly half of adults belonging to Generation Z, who are currently ages 18 to 24, say they live paycheck to paycheck. Cramer thinks young adults can do a better job investing some of their money, even if it's just a few dollars. They seem like they have a lot of money, even when they don't have a lot of money. He's noticed that young workers don't have much earning power. They still spend a significant portion, for instance, eating out. Number of young people that he sees at restaurants, who he knows don't have the kind of money that can afford that. Young people buying $14 margaritas after a long work day. Yeah, well, I certainly didn't do that sort of thing. I drank draft beer if I drank out at all when I was young and broke. And he said, oh, I know what you might say. Oh, Cramer's rich. I don't want to hear this lecture, but did you live in your car on the side of Interstate 5? I remember when he told us that story on the air when we interviewed one time. He was living in Sacramento, living in his car while he had a job. And even then, while he was living in his car, he still put $100 into a stock index fund every month. And he did that all throughout his 20s, and he said it made me a millionaire. He said, I'm not talking anything draconian. I'm not saying don't ever go out. Just don't spend money each week that you shouldn't have. Look at how you're spending your money and spend less. That's just clearly true.
Now, if I was living in my car in Sacramento by, like, say, Interstate 80, would that count, or does it have to be I-5? in his example.
It's none of my business. I just know how little I ate out when I was not making much money.
Never
was how often.
Never. Okay.
And it was, and if I did, it was going to be because I got the 2-for-1 Whoppers with cheese. Remember Arby's beef and cheddar's fire for $5. That was a coupon for a while where it was like literally cheaper than I could eat going to the grocery store.
Well, and the idea of going out with your friends and ordering a $14 margarita, I mean, I love that.
But
when you're young and poor, drink like a normal person at home, alone, in the dark, muttering angrily.
Right.
Like I do.
And to relieve the misery of your life. Don't drink for joy. Drink to relieve misery.
Right.
Oh,
and not to connect with people.
I took this too far myself.
Yeah, they took it dark there. A little dark. Somebody turn on the lights. Hey, you know, I was frantically rooting through my stack over here of emails to find this one from Katie, which I held on to. We're talking about living like it's the 50s, which might be necessary. I don't know. And then we got to get to China's economic problems, I suppose, at some point. But she said, I grew up on a farm in Northern California, no TV, one room schoolhouse for elementary, first job at age 5, working on the farm, helping out with chores and stuff like that. Learned to drive so I could do any job on the dairy at a young age, 50 to 60 hour work weeks during the summer, school breaks in middle school, high school, college, etc. This is tough. This is more than you're going to do probably, but I'll get to the point. We didn't eat out, hunted for our food, had dinner as a family every night. I bought my own clothes, entertainment, etc. from age 12 out of my $3 an hour pay rate. It taught me the value of money like I never realized. When I left the farm after college, got a job in Stockton, California, I was mocked relentlessly for how I lived. I drove a used pickup that I bought myself in high school, packed a sandwich and veggies for lunch from home every day, showed up every day for my shift, and learned more than I was taught. I love that phrase. I learned more than I was taught.
That's a good one. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's a good old like farmish expression. I love that. I didn't realize that was something to be ashamed of. I became store manager after 5 years, bought a house for myself at 26 years old. My coworkers still mocked me, but now it was about being the white girl making too much money that she could buy a house. They literally did not understand until I explained it. The money they spent on eating out 3 meals a day and tattoos and booze at clubs all the time was the money I saved to buy my house by making the lunches they mocked and improving my work skills to get paid more. I wish everyone would go back to living like it's the 50s. She says, I feel like we were better people. Our society was nicer to live in. People understood the value of a dollar.
To be fair, is that the right word? My mom lived the way she, my and dad, lived the way they live. By the hard lesson of reality, not just like born with stronger moral character.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's how you get there, and that's why that's where this next generation is going to come up with the idea of, hey, how about we don't drink expensive drinks at the restaurant? We go over to my place with a 6-pack of not very expensive beer. That's going to come out of necessity, is where it's going to come from.
Right,
unless we come up with a generous enough welfare state with tiny holes in our safety net that you can get away with continuing to splurge, which we may do as a nation for a while.
Gee, let me think. Can you get people to vote for that? We're in trouble.
That is one difference between now and back in the day. If you didn't get right with your finances, ain't weren't a lot of options to bail you out, other than the local church, maybe.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the words to the theme from All in the Family. Didn't need no welfare state. Everybody pull their weight. Yep. Good times.
Armstrong and Getty.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
Point of personal privilege.
Don't get brazen with me.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
I promised the most fascinating stat you've ever heard. I don't know if this can live up to that, but it's pretty damn fascinating. And the source of it makes it doubly important. This is an NBC News report on a teachers union poll that was done by a Democratic operation to have information for Democrats to help them win the upcoming election. Let me read from it. The American Federation of Teachers circulated this poll conducted by this Democratic firm as a call to arms for its members and allies to emphasize more popular proposals like spending more on schools and reducing class sizes and de-emphasizing fights that center on cultural issues. Let me get more specific.
Boy.
A major set of red flags in the poll. Again, this is from NBC News. I'm not reading from Tucker Carlson or something like that. A major set of red flags in the poll for Democrats and teachers unions was a series of questions that looked like they were ripped from Ron DeSantis' Friday speech on critical race theory and teaching kids about sexuality and gender identity. While the survey didn't mention DeSantis by name, it tested education messages he has popularized nationally. He's been able to popularize them because they're very popular. More
that
so
makes it
than
easier to popularize them, no doubt.
Yeah. One poll question found that voters by 32 points said they're more likely to vote for candidates who believe public schools should focus less on teaching race and more on core subjects. That was a 30-point win for that.
Wow.
By 27 points, call it 30, they said schools should be banned from teaching sexual orientation and gender identity to kids in kindergarten through third grade, which is exactly the don't say gay law that was mocked by the elite media as just the most hateful thing that has ever happened in America. Remember Saturday Night Live opened with it and the Oscars or Grammys, whoever did their big thing on it. It was just, don't say, how could anything be so awful as to outlaw the word gay in Florida, which of course is not what happened. It was just, let's not teach little kids about sex orientation and gender. Turns out that's a winning issue by 30 freaking points. And the Democrats are telling their own party, hey, this is what most people think about this. And one more before we discuss. Also by almost 30 points, 28 points, the poll said that transgender athletes should be banned from competing in girls' sports.
30-point win there, too.
That's incredible.
I'll be danged.
That's incredible.
Well, getting back to the don't say gay thing, that was portrayed in all of the elite quarters, whether it's education, media or entertainment, and they have that ground. It's just, they do. That was portrayed as a product of the most reactionary and cruel 10% among us. The most angry, bitter, ignorant, hateful. Maybe 5% of the population was behind that. No, it's a 30-point win, and all it has to do with is hitting little children with your gender theory garbage.
Well, I actually wonder, did reasonable, smart people at the teachers' unions or at this this polling outfit, which I don't know, it's a Hart Research. They do polling for the Democrats to help them win elections. I wonder if reasonable, smart people did this polling to alert the blue checkmark Twitter crowd, because they knew the results they were going to get, to alert people and say, hey, I know you're really into a lot of this stuff, but it ain't going to win any elections. I mean, it ain't even close to as popular as you think it is.
Yeah, well, much as I dislike and resent the big-time teachers' unions, it's absolutely clear that there's a war for the Democratic Party going on. And loud, vicious, social media-mastering minority who's trying to jam all this stuff down everybody's throats with the help, by the way, of idiotic, freaking, white guilt-suffering, dopey, college-educated, suburban white women. Anyway, the mainstreamer Democrats, they understand, you know, I look around me and people are not into this. Teaching a second-grade little boy that he's probably a little girl if he wants to be this week, and then rushing him to get hormone treatments and surgery, more on that to come. Yeah, they're looking around saying, we need to make a stand or we're going to lose this thing.
So let's call these all 30-point wins, since it was 32, 27, and 28. That's probably within the margin of error. Just to make things simple, we'll call it a 30-point win, which means it was probably roughly 65-35. There's probably a chunk of I don't know or whatever in there, but whatever.
Something like two-thirds, one-third, or twice as many people against as in favor of this stuff, yeah.
If it was roughly that, it was roughly 2-1. People agreeing with you and every normal person, you know, I gotta believe maybe half of that third was just being kind of pulled along because everything they saw on TV led them to believe that, oh yeah, I guess that don't say gay law sounds pretty terrible to me. I agree. So I'll bet it's even a bigger win than the 30 points, actually.
I think, yeah, if you sat down with people for 5 minutes and talked to them about it. Yeah, because a certain number of people just want to go with what is popular or what they perceive to be the quote unquote enlightened position.
Yeah,
or not racist or not cruel. They just want to be good people.
They want to be nice. And they think the nice thing to do is to allow transgender athletes to compete in girls' sports. Except for, 2-1, Americans think that's a bad idea. 2-1, Americans don't want kids third grade and younger taught sexual orientation and gender. 2-1!
Right.
God,
right.
Remember how hot that whole don't say gay thing was?
Oh, yeah.
And presented to you everywhere as if it was obviously hate. What can we do to stop this?
Describe it as that way is just blatantly dishonest.
Yeah, and it was described that way by everyone all the time, as if that was the name of the bill. And then finally, the whole 2-1, how about we focus on just like, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic and not race in our schools? So I thought those were amazing poll numbers. I don't know if I should be happy about that or not. I mean, that's the result I want. Do I want the Democratic Party to wake up to that? Yeah. I've heard.
You know, I would say yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm more an ideologue than a partisan.
Sure.
I would rather have a sane, reasonable Democratic Party, more like the one I grew up with, and not these radical theorists who operate in a bizarre academic world that has no relationship with human beings or their endeavors. I want them to be swept away by history, please, as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And then there's this term that I became aware of in the last year or something like that. Popularism as a, how come that hasn't become more of populists, but popularists? Like, how about we do what's popular with most people by far?
You know, I read a great, little bit of editorial about the left's inconsistency and howling about democracy all the time. We need democracy. You know, the court has overruled the will of the people. Okay. I tell you what. Let's have a big vote on teaching radical gender theory to little children. Let's have a big vote, a national referendum on allowing biological males to whoop the hell out of women in sports. Let's have a giant, referendum on, what was the third one?
Whether or not you want to teach race in school versus the core subjects.
Oh, right. Yeah, let's have a vote. Is that you're that in love with democracy? Let's go ahead. But anyway, I don't want to engage in the same hypocrisy they do. There's some things that are fit for quote-unquote democracy and some that are not.
Sure, exactly. I thought that was some pretty interesting stuff right there, and that's what the poll is being spread out to Democrats across the country and say, hey, some of these issues might not be as popular as you think they are or all your college friends are telling you they are.
You know what's really an interesting dynamic, though, and I'm hearing, because I have a psychic connection with our beloved listeners. Jack knows this. I'm feeling the vibes across the transom of all of the people who have been forced and are going to be forced in the near past or future to sit through these training sessions or engage in these struggle sessions about wokeism and anti-racism and the rest of it, or their woke teachers teaching their kids this stuff. And the only thing I would say to you is have courage, friends, because you have way more allies than opponents. The problem is, though, the viciousness of the people who believe this stuff and their willingness to bring you to your knees, whether professionally, socially, or academically at your college or whatever, they will ruin you. But we have to find a way to stand up against this crap. If the critical theory crowd gets science, we're doomed, because science is about fact and testing things and retesting them.
I represent science.
I heard this headline, I think it was yesterday, and I made my face like I just found out my son had sold our cow for magic beans. I mean, a combination of disbelief, anger, and horror. But Jonathan Scott on Fox News was interviewing Jonathan Turley about the story I'm talking about. Clip number 80, please, Michael.
Some scholars are pushing for anthropologists to stop classifying ancient remains as either male or female. You write about this at length in your website. You say, professors have called for researchers to stop identifying ancient human remains by biological gender because they cannot gauge how a person identified at that time. I mean, they're basically saying, well, maybe it's biologically a caveman, but she identified as a cavewoman. We don't know, so we shouldn't classify it.
But look, if there are non-binary Neanderthals, I'd love to read about them. But the thing that I don't understand is why academics would want fewer data points to say, don't analyze, don't classify according to biological gender, don't look at ancestry connections or races of these specimens. Why would you want to reduce the information you're working with? You can still come to these same conclusions. But the problem is that when these things are suggested, there's a palpable fear among professors that they will be targeted by the next mob, and they remain silent. And the result is that we're having a real diminishment of our higher educational programs.
So you don't want to say caveman anymore. You want to say cave human with the capacity to fell a mammoth.
For instance, you know, you really ought to read, if you can, Lindsay and Pluckrose's Cynical Theories. You can't believe how loopy this stuff is at its base. They want to erase all binaries, especially anything that is AB, male, female. They want to deny that that exists at all. And so if you have a clearly female who lived 1.3 million years ago, you have to deny that that could even be a female. This stuff doesn't make any sense. It's idiotic. It's bizarre. And these people are wrong, wrong, wrong. It's not justification to be mean to anybody who's a very effeminate male or a very butch female or whatever. Of course not. Cruelty is wrong in all cases. But to back down in the face of something that bizarre and absurd is dangerous. But Jonathan Turley makes a good point. The professors are terrified the mob will come for them. And there's no protection on a university campus against the mob. The administration will turn and charge at you with the mob.
Yeah, so you're in the corner of some university looking at old rocks your whole life. Nobody's paid any attention to you ever. All of a sudden, you'd have a firestorm if you made some sort of assertion about gender. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. People are marching into your classroom while you're trying to teach and calling for you to be fired, and the administration's taking them seriously.
Wow.
Armstrong and Getty.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without
without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
True international summer depression.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
This is like Occam's razor, which is the most common razor that I've heard of. This is like the, you know, I don't know, I don't know what the difference between a razor and an axiom or a rule or a law or whatever is. Occam's razor being when you're weighing alternative explanations for something, the one with the fewest assumptions should be chosen. In other words, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one for anything, which is a good one to go with. But somebody was posting a whole bunch of these yesterday that I had never heard of, and they're pretty good, I thought. I'm gonna tell my kids some of these. The luck razor. When choosing between two paths, choose the path that has a larger luck surface area. Your actions put you in a position where luck is more likely to strike. It's hard to get lucky watching TV at home. It's easy to get lucky when you're engaging in learning, for instance.
Huh.
That's the old idea that luck is opportunity meeting preparation.
Preparedness, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So do whatever's going to give you the largest luck surface area. And, you know, sitting around hoping doesn't give you much luck surface area.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. The arena razor. When faced with two paths, choose the path that puts you in the arena. It's easy to throw rocks from the sidelines. It's scary and lonely in the arena, but it's where growth happens. Once you're in the arena, and this is the real reason I read it, because the other part wasn't that surprising to me. Once you're in the arena, never take advice from people on the sidelines. I thought that's a good one. If you're actually doing something, don't listen to the freaking people who have never done it or aren't doing it. Or whatever. That's a good one.
I remember on a number of occasions, youngsters who wanted to get into the radio business would ignore my pleas to them. Don't. And they'd want advice. And the one thing we always told them was get on the air. Get a gig somewhere. Doesn't matter where, in the middle of the night, get on the air and do it and do it and do it and do it. Don't worry about, you know, the market or the music format or if you like the talk show politics of that station, just get on the air.
This is a dumb one, but the one that popped into my head was when I was in the arena of running in races regularly. And I ran every day, and then I'd run in these races, but I'm very, very slow. The amount of criticism I would get from people who don't run at freaking all was amazing. About how slow I was. How much did you run this weekend? Well, I haven't run in years. Well, then shut the F up. But the amount of criticism you can get from doing something from people who aren't doing it is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's pathetic on their side, too.
The invested versus spent razor. Time is either invested or spent. Invested time are actions that compound, like reading, physical activity, mindfulness, and relationship building. Spent time, as opposed to invested time, are actions that don't. And pretty easy to come up with all kinds of spent time that you can think of that don't really add up to anything. When choosing what to do, prioritize investing time, not spending it. Yeah, we got to all do better on that, I suppose. The rooms razor.
I'm a dynamo of productive activity.
All dynamo. Day long?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I take 3 minutes to have fun between 7:05 and 7:08 in the evening. And boy, do I have a good time. Then it's back to work.
So you just heard about the golf tournament over the weekend? You didn't watch any of it? Just...
Oh, I watched a 3-minute quadruple speed encapsulation. So quadruple speed, it was obviously like 45 seconds.
You heard somebody talking about it while you were hand hewing a grand piano and taking Spanish lessons.
Exactly. Exactly. This finish is bueno, I said to my instructor as I painstakingly sanded it.
And studying for your LSAT. The rooms razor. If you have a choice between entering two rooms, choose the room where you're more likely to be the dumbest one in the room. Once you're in the room, talk less and listen more. It's bad for your ego, but great for your growth. Occam's razor. We mentioned that the simplest explanation is usually the right one. Listening razor. If you encounter someone with opinions or perspectives very different from your own, listen twice as much as you speak. Our natural tendency when we hear a view we disagree with is to respond and refute it. Default to listen mode. You'll learn more that way. That's a good one. That's a really good one. I've gotten way better at that. Part of it is I just don't argue with people. But I've definitely got better. I want to hear your... I can tell already that I don't agree with anything you think, but I want to hear your entire, like, view of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you go off into life with that view, me not confronting it, is no harm done. I'm not going to change your mind. So,
no.
Yeah.
It helps to have the outlet of this show to be a little more restrained in that way. But, yeah, true. I used to get all weirded out when people would come on strong with that stuff or be strange or nuts or whatever. And I try to remind myself, hey, this will be over in a minute or two. Invest in it. Enjoy it. See what happens.
The lion razor. If you have the choice, always choose to sprint and then rest like a lion. I hadn't thought about this, but this is kind of the way I do things. That's the way I'm built. Most people are not wired to work 9 to 5, long periods of steady, monotonous work. If your goal is to do inspired, creative work, you have to work like a lion. Sprint when inspired, rest, repeat. Sprint and rest, as opposed to just kind of steady, regular. I don't know, it kind of goes against some other razors about, you know, the tortoise and the hare and that sort of stuff. And then
no freaking tortoise ever beat a hare. I hate that. That's a bad fable.
Can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.